I am Katie Lear. I am your convention coordinator, and I would like to welcome everybody to the 73rd Florida Council of the Blind Convention, to the Guide Dog Users Group. We welcome our people on Zoom. We have a wonderful panel for you today. We'd like to thank ACB Media for helping us, because we could not conduct this convention without their Zoom rooms. Rick Morin is in charge of the ACB Media team. He has wonderful helpers. Cecily Nipper has been primarily our coordinator for this convention. This morning, our host is Marianne Grignan. Herbie Allen is our streamer. And Cecily Laney Nipper is our monitor. Our other support person is Ryan Cordell. He is our in-house support. Let's do the business meeting, Judy, please.
Okay, so...
And you should have a microphone up there.
I do have one, but is it working? How's that?
Check.
Yeah, get nice and close and talk real loud.
Okay.
Get that school teacher voice going.
Yeah. So you guys got the minutes, I'm sure, have read them.
Can
do I have a second? That was Kathleen.
Okay, Kathleen, second...
Do I have
you said yes? Do we have a second? Katie Lear seconds.
I only have Allison. And
anyone else?
You're in the wrong
All
row.
In favor, say aye.
You need to be an ACB.
All opposed, don't say no.
ACB media.
But if you do, that's okay too. All right.
Seconded.
Okay.
Okay, so we're our business meeting. So what was the last thing said? Katie Lear makes a motion to accept the Treasury's report. Do we have a second?
That's Brianna.
Brianna, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we're good.
How about the minutes?
We did them.
We've done the minutes.
Oh, you did the
minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, because we did. We're trying to. We don't want to lose time.
Okay. Good. Okay.
I will be right back.
Okay, so we're good to go now.
We're good to go. Okay. Our three presenters are here. This is Doug Hall, past president of Guide Dog Users of Florida. Our president, Judy August, is on the phone, on the computer, which is great. Thank you, Judy.
Who's here?
Me.
Judy's here.
Just to lead off, there have been many questions, concerns that people have about guide dogs and what does it take to make a great or a good guide dog. So what we want to do is to present that information. We have three really good puppy raisers here to talk to us about what does it take to make a good guide dog puppy. What I want to do is have them speak in the order that they came in to our thing, leading off with Carrie Limeris from Guiding Eyes, Jocelyn and Carl Hargrove from Dogs Inc., and Christine Heim from Seeing Eye. We have a number of concerns that were brought up, and I decided to leave it to our presenters to discuss the areas they feel is important. Carrie, you're first.
Thanks, Doug. So hello, everybody. My name is Carrie Limeris. As Doug said, I am a puppy program manager at Guiding Eyes for the Blind. And I thought I would speak in mostly in general terms, because as you can imagine, with the thousands of puppy raisers out there, just in the U.S. alone, there's a bit of a variety between schools in terms of how we're organized and what we ask puppy raisers to do on the specific side. But in general, the task of a puppy raiser is to help a puppy to understand how to work with you. So we are very focused on socialization and making sure that pups are exposed to a lot of different things in preparation for the wide variety of places that you work with your dogs. We focus in our school a lot on house manners, because while it's great to have a good dog working relationship, it's equally, if not more important, in our opinion, to have a good home relationship. And we want our dogs to be easy to live with. And then raisers are also working on teaching the dogs basic obedience skills in preparation for their going in for training to learn refine those skills and also to learn the harness part of the work. Puppy raisers make a wide variety of commitments. I know folks were asking, like, how long do people have puppies? You know, what classes do they go to? In our organization, and in most, we puppy test our puppies between 7 and 8 weeks of age, and we send them off to puppy raisers shortly thereafter. Depending on the school and depending on training's needs, dogs will generally come back in for training between, say, 14 and 18 months of age. And that's where they do their harness work. For us, most puppy raisers take the puppies at 8 weeks and bring them all the way through to in for training. But we also have people that make shorter commitments. So we might have people start a puppy and work on the basic house training and get them ready for the crate. And then they get finished by somebody who has a more complicated environment and can't work on that phase. We have sort of baby specialists. We have older dog specialists. We have puppy raisers that work together in teams. But for the most part, you know, you're looking at dogs being with raisers for probably 14 to 16 months before they come to you. I do not want to take all the time. So why don't I pass the next section, pass off to the next person so they can kind of make general comments?
Thank you. Okay. The next would be Jocelyn and Carl Hargrove.
Hi, this is Carl Hargrove from Dogs Inc. and my wife Jocelyn, who actually does all the hard work. Carrie actually covered a lot of things, and because the basics are the same, we do an awful lot of the same things they do. And because some of our trainers and management have been in Guiding Eyes before, there is a lot of bleed over with that, and techniques that we've been using for years, they evolve and change as, you know, the needs change. We were given a list of 18 different questions to go over, and if somebody really feels hard and fast about wanting to know the answer to a question, you know, please feel free to interrupt and speak up on this one. What skills are taught to a puppy? Well, basically, in addition to skills, we have love and exposure. Take a healthy young pup and turn to a healthy, well-exposed, well-trained young adult. You know, sit, stay, calm down, heel, turn. You know, it's all the basic obedience on that one. And as puppy raisers, we don't do very many more different type skills. We used to do a bunch more, but we've simplified more. So the actual technical skills are taught by the trainers when they go back to the school with the professional trainers at Dogs Inc.
Exposures.
We do a lot of exposures. We have to expose different environments, whether starting as age-appropriate exposures too. The older the dog is, the smaller the box of acceptable behaviors is, the tighter refinement we're looking for. But we start out with things at a distance. We have puppy groups. We have meetings in person and virtual. And some are just fully virtual groups too. But we do meetings anywhere from parks to malls to stores.
Airports
go through TSA handling to give both the TSA agents and our puppies exposures to things like that. And we try and get each year go through a full cycle where they get a pretty good exposure. That's a big part of our socialization training. They're allowed to be puppies. We want our dogs to be puppies because anybody can take a dog and do AKC training and drill and have a little robot. But, you know, you have to have the intelligent disobedience that kicks in to keep things safe for the dog and for the user. So it's not just basic training, it's helping the dog to make decisions and teaching the dog to make the right decisions.
Okay.
Next.
Oh,
you're talking fast for everybody. We're out of time. I could talk for a long time on this.
Okay. How about then we go to Christine Hyam from the Seeing Eye, the head of program development and puppy development and fundraising. Christine?
You're muted, Christine.
Christine, you're muted.
Yeah, there we go. Hi, yes, I'm Christine Hyam. I am manager of the puppy development. So I oversee we have area coordinators that work with the various clubs in throughout New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and parts of New York and Maryland. And then we also work with the families that live in those areas. I've also been a puppy raiser for a very long time. Our family started over 50 years ago raising puppies for the Seeing Eye. So I really have seen all sides of, you know, being a puppy raiser and working with the puppies, and now in a more professional part of working with the families. I've also been a club leader and currently still a club leader with my county club. So I've kind of had my hands in all parts and seen all sides of things. And it's really been a joy working with the families to help these puppies develop from these young puppies and becoming more mature. And, you know, basically Carrie and Carl and Jocelyn, they really talked about everything already. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, you know, that we're working with the puppies and helping them to learn all the basics to help prepare them to become future guide dogs. But of course, you know, we didn't talk about some of the challenges. Yes, we want them to have those good house manners when they're with us, because if we're developing those house manners at home, that will hopefully then transfer when they're out in public spaces as well. I know there was a question about staying off of furniture and seats and vehicles. Yes, we try to keep our puppy and reminding those puppy raisers, you know, best behaved dogs are lying on the floor and staying off furniture. And also when they're traveling in the cars, they are expected to be lying on the floor. And that starts right from the beginning when they're little baby puppies. So we're really starting those skills right from the beginning. And I know families sometimes will say, well, my pet dog is allowed on furniture. You know, how is that going to work, you know, with this puppy that can't be on furniture? And we always say consistency, lots of consistency. And when they're starting right from the beginning and you're teaching them what you would like them to do, they're going to adjust to that and they'll be just fine. So all of that, you know, comes into that part of raising a puppy and helping them to be a good citizen, whether they're in the home or outside in the public spaces. And again, there was a question about grooming. And that again starts right from the beginning, just by handling our puppies, you know, touching all different parts of their body so that they're going to get used to that when they're being groomed or when they have to go to the vet for a visit. Just making sure that they are comfortable with all of that. So there's so many things that puppy raisers do to get them ready. And we appreciate that so much. And the puppy raisers really are so dedicated in helping to make this happen. And the funny thing is sometimes they worry a lot about it. And they're like, it's okay. Take a breath. We know you're doing a really good job. But sometimes they just feel like they have to be perfect. And we know that, as Carl had mentioned, you know, we don't want these dogs to be robots. We want to develop that sense of thinking, you know, and making a decision. So I think that's hard sometimes for families to know that, you know, those puppies, you know, they're always, when they come to the puppy club meetings, because our meetings, our clubs meet at least once a month, sometimes twice a month. And they're concerned that, oh, my puppy's not being perfect. And it's like, okay, but look at the situation you're put in. You know, you have a group of people with all these puppies here, and they know when they get to this location, they know they're going to see all their friends there. Because they'll say, oh, they do so great when they're at home or they're out in public places. But when they come here, and it's like, okay, we can work, we'll work with them. But you have to remember the situation they're in. So it's really helping the puppy raisers to also understand, yes, we're looking for that good public behavior. But they're still puppies. They're still learning. So we just continue that process and help them through. And they go through different challenges at different ages as well. So, you know, we're just always trying to prepare them. Okay, this is what you might see. This is how we're going to work through it. But we're always there to help support them through that.
Thank you. Okay.
Doug, can I just echo or bounce off what Christine said?
You go right ahead, because I was just asking a question.
I really appreciate your talking about how hard puppy raisers work in terms of taking things like really seriously. We often have to help folks to relax a little because they feel a real responsibility to provide the perfect guide dog. and, you know, their dogs. And the more that we learn about the way that puppies learn and dogs learn and people, frankly, learn, the more we realize that if we do it in a fun, almost gamey way, like we're playing games together, and the dogs never know the weight of the responsibility that they're about to take on, then it helps them to learn their lessons and learn how to be with us and work with us. So if you meet a puppy raiser and you see them working with a puppy, it might look different than what you're used to with your working guide dog. And I would say it should. These young puppies who are children or adolescents, you know, they're not quite ready for the weight of adulthood yet. And that's why they're with us. So thanks for bringing that up, Christine.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, I have a question I wanted to ask, and several people have brought this to me over the years, is how do puppy raisers instill the ability to not be distracted by other dogs or people?
Practice.
Do you want to take that one, Carl?
Well, Jocelyn does, but we start off with practice. Limited exposure. You have dogs, you know, dog-to-dog exposure is a good thing. You start off at a distance. You approach a dog that's seated and behaved. And as soon as your dog starts driving, pulling sled dog and everything else, you just stop your dog, redirect, bring it back. And then you just keep on approaching closer and closer, redirect. And then pretty soon you have both dogs moving, but you go person to person to where the dog's on the outside. Then eventually we go dog to dog as we're crossing. And after five or six times, oh, this is ho-hum. I could do this. I don't have to pull. And you know, that'll only last for a little while because the next new dog it sees, they'll go right into it. But it's starting to desensitize it to exposure, controlled exposure, and then redirecting. And don't be in any kind of hurry when you do this because it takes time.
Okay.
Distance,
duration, and distraction.
Distraction, yes.
Okay, good.
Practice, practice, and practice. That's the general answer for that one. Our goal in our puppy program is that our puppies learn that any distraction is essentially a cue to reconnect with the handler. So it could be a dog, it could be a person, it could be a bird, you name it.
Oh, agreed. Cool. Okay. Okay.
Can I bring up, just because I want to make sure everybody is really aware, what costs there are for raisers to doing this?
Sure.
Because I think sometimes that's kind of a surprise for a lot of people.
I think that's something that needs to be discussed, yes.
I did see a question about that. So it does vary from school to school. So I'm going to give you sort of the generic response. For the most part, puppy raisers are given us, you know, some of the supplies that they need. So we give our puppy raisers some toys and bowls and leashes and crates and that sort of thing. But people still buy a lot of stuff. Some organizations can cover the dog's food, but not everybody can do that. Most of us cover the veterinary care and can help the raisers with transport, but meaning to and from the school for, you know, when the puppy gets placed and when they come back in for training. But that's not always the case. Sometimes people are bringing their dogs and they're covering, you know, the driving costs of going to and from their classes and that sort of thing. So it is definitely, you know, not just a time commitment, but also a monetary commitment. And Christine, I don't know exactly the seeing eye, so I don't know if you want to speak to that at all as well.
I think you've pretty much covered in general terms, because we pay for the food, we pay for the veterinary care, we start them off with a few supplies, and if there is something that a family, you know, maybe is in need, that you know, we can usually help them out in that way for things that they would need. But pretty much you covered everything.
That's actually a great point, is that we don't want the monetary part of it to be a barrier to entry. So we are always trying to work with puppy raisers who have any concerns in that area. Especially for us, we have a lot of college students. And so we try to make sure that they get all the things that they need and they're not prevented from raising by the cost factor.
Okay. Yeah, dogs, Inc., the basic equipment, kennel if they need it, exercise pen if it's needed, veterinary bills is covered. but all transportation to and from training, to and from the school. And other than initial starter bag of food, you know, we cover the cost of the food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Okay. It was mentioned earlier, I wanted to go back a little bit, exposure. One of the things I think is important in terms of puppy raising is exposing that puppy to various issues. Would any of you like to speak to what exposures the dogs are given?
Going to be broad terms there too, Doug. So we talk about socialization in sort of three buckets at Guiding Eyes. Socialization around your house. So, you know, do you have kids? Do you have other family members visiting? Do you have pets? Do you have farm animals? Do you have traffic outside your house? That sort of thing. Your neighborhood and sort of your local area that you can get right to, you know, what is the street like? What are the cars like? You know, that sort of thing. And then out and about. So puppies do everything. Most states allow pups in training to go everywhere that dogs in training or working dogs go. So you name it, we try to go there with our puppies at some point, with a few exceptions. And every school has their different exceptions. For us, our puppies are never on escalators. And we are very careful about things like, you know, going to a zoo. We want to make sure our dogs are physically safe as well as in a good training spot. We walk our puppy raisers through various levels of socialization. So like my classic example when I talk to potential raisers is my grocery store. When I first get a puppy, we are hanging around in the parking lot watching people coming and going. We're watching the doors open and close. We're listening to the carts. My next phase is I'm going grocery shopping and my husband's actually doing the shopping, and I'm just in the door and out of the door with the puppy, just learning how to take in the environment and stay connected to me. As we progress, he can send me off to get a few things in the aisles, but he's still like manning the cart. And then by the time my dogs are ready to come for training, I can go shopping by myself and do, you know, the full gamut from beginning to end with no need for a helper.
Okay.
What we're looking for by the time a dog gets fully to a young adult stage and ready to go back in for training is to have the exposures that the typical guide dog user would have, whether it's a city bus, an airport, transportation, mm-hmm. riding in cars, walking through parks, maybe going through a university or different workplaces. So by the time they're all the way ready to go in for training, we try and give them those exposures to where they're calm. From a small town with slow traffic to a big city with lots of noise. You know, we just progressively work it up and give them more and more. But we try and keep everything we do to where if the dog starts showing signs of stressing out or overwhelming, that we could back away and reduce the stress through increasing the distance, which is why things like Disney's just out of the ballpark, because there's no way you can pull back from massive crowds and huge areas. You have to have a way to get the dog away from the stress.
Okay, I'm just curious in clarification. Are you saying, Carl, that generally you try to avoid areas where there might be a lot of confusion or a lot of people?
Exactly.
Leave it
because
to the professional
these are
trainers.
Still puppies, and we have to have room to remove the dog from that area quickly without them overstressing. Rock concerts, no. Fireworks, no. Big crowded areas, no. Malls, yeah, but, you know, once again, age appropriate in the right time of day. But big crowds and big noisy areas, no. We try and protect our dogs to give them the out.
That's for the professional trainers when they go back in.
Yeah, okay. A lot of times we're looking at the confidence level of the puppy. So, and that can change during the time that you have the puppy. So it's really a lot with the puppy raisers, really recognizing and knowing their puppy. What situations have they been exposed to? What can they handle at that time? And our area coordinators are always there to help to assist as well. And they can come evaluate. And we have puppy club leaders as well and puppy educators in our clubs that also assist the puppy raisers. So it's really a building blocks. Mm-hmm. You know, you're first starting out and, you know, you're learning about your puppy when you first get them. So you're really starting out in quieter areas initially. I mean, of course, we do have some puppies that are raised in cities. Mm-hmm. So they might develop a little bit faster as far as, your crowds and the different sounds that are there in the cities. But especially for those families that are living out in, more rural areas, it may be a slower process, but we really want them to kind of build up so that they can get those puppies into those situations. Our clubs do a really nice job as well in creating outings for their puppy club. So it'll have various, trying to hit a lot of, checking a lot of boxes of what experiences the puppies need. But again, if there's a puppy that we feel, if there's a big trip of going a bus trip into New York City for us, if we feel there's a puppy that's not quite, doesn't have that confidence to be in with the hustle and bustle of the city, we're going to say, okay, I think we need to sit this one out. We want your puppy to have the best experience possible. And it's like Carl said, you want to have that ability. If you see your puppy is stressed, you give them some space, but they're still not recovering, it's time to leave. It's not the right outing for them. So you do want to have that, be able to leave if you have to. But we really want to try to make sure, yes, a little bit of stress is good for a dog, but if they really can't recover from it, then it's not the right outing for them at that time.
Okay. You always have a plan B and an escape. Yeah. So I always advise puppy raisers, don't take a dog anywhere that you can't leave. So if it's your grandparents' 75th wedding anniversary and it's a once in a lifetime thing, probably not your best bet, because sometimes things happen and you got to go. The other thing I wanted to ask for the other schools, because I'm curious, one thing that we do is we trade puppies. So once a quarter, puppy raisers will switch puppies for a week or two. And that's one way of our looking at the dog in different kinds of environments. So like I don't have kids, so I like to send my puppy to a house with kids, or I send my dog to another raiser who lives in the city because I live in a pretty rural area. And so we're just trying to make sure that we make them as flexible and, have as many experiences as they can.
At Dogs Inc., we have puppy camps. We swap for 2 weeks, 2 weeks at a time with other puppy raisers, either a two-way swap or a three-way swap. Different environments, different handlers.
I'm the club leader, and I decide who switches with who for a different environment.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We don't have anything scheduled. It's, if... through observation, sometimes we will suggest, I think this dog maybe needs a little bit of a time in another environment. But a lot of our raisers, when they need a puppy sitter, so they're getting that experience there. Again, also looking at your outings and trying to, capture those different things that, people would need. Of course, like having a cat in a home, you definitely need that to have happen in the home. But, a lot of our members go to school presentations as well. So they get, some exposure there with kids. But we have nothing officially scheduled. But, again, through puppy sitting, sometimes just families want to borrow a dog for something. So they get different experience.
Especially in the summer.
Yes.
Well, one of the things I noticed in listening here is that the puppy raiser teaches the dog all kinds of things. However, and this is what it's important, however, what the dog does once it's been matched has a lot to do with how well that dog does as a guide dog. So there needs to be a follow-up with the handler with what the puppy raiser has taught the dog.
I mean, I think dogs are dogs. And some dogs, they learn something once and no matter what house they go to, that's their thing. Other dogs say, how about here? How about here? And that's what we're trying to accomplish by getting the dog to a few different places is, doing that before they're going to you. But my bottom line is dogs do what works. And so I can teach a dog not to go on the counter for food, but if food is left within their reach and they get a hold of it, then they learn, oh, going on counters is a good thing.
So. I've heard that before.
I always joke, if I found $1,000 on your counter, Doug, I'd be back at your counter for sure. So there you go.
Okay. Good point. Okay.
Yeah, and I think sometimes dogs will flourish in different environments. Like some dogs are just, they could go anywhere and that's, that would be great if all dogs were that way. But, you know, through some of the reports that our puppy raisers complete in that year that they have them, and also right before they come in for training, they have a report that they need to complete that covers a lot of different, you know, aspects of the of dog's behavior. And then the our area coordinators also follow up throughout that time. They keep narratives on the puppies too. So that helps a little bit for the instructors as they take the puppies, the dogs on in training. But there might be some things that, you know, a family experienced in their own home, and it's never, maybe it was a concern, but it's, does not show up at all when the dog is then in training, because it's just, you know, maybe it was just the environment that they were in, that they maybe learned something, like kind of Carrie said, hey, if something's there, a dog's going to, they might try. Even the best, well-behaved dogs sometimes make a decision that's maybe not the best decision. So, okay. But yeah, it's.
I think that for the furniture too, right? Like we, it's funny because I've had puppy raisers who have met guide dog users that were match with their dog later on, and they said, oh, they let them on the couch, and so as long as you invite them on the couch, it's good, like we should be able to do that. And my answer is like, oh, no, I have yet to meet the dog that you can't undo my year's worth of training in under 30 minutes getting on the couch or the bed. But okay, the other way around can be tough, right? Okay. I'm for those of you that, you know, maybe you don't want the dog on your bed, but if the dog is in the habit, it's very hard to break that habit.
Okay, good. That's a good point. I remember my very first instructor said that dogs are like children. They're as bad as you let them or as good as you make them. Okay, good point. Okay, we're doing fine. Do we have any questions that anyone has for any of our panelists? Are there anybody raise their hand?
There are none in Zoom currently.
None in Zoom? Okay. How about in the room? I understand there's a, from Katie, there's a bunch of people in the room.
Hi there. Okay. This is Matt. I heard somebody talking earlier about they don't let their dog go on escalators, and I was curious as to why that would be. I was just thinking, as somebody who uses or likes to use escalators a lot, and there are a lot of areas that I travel where, unfortunately, to use an elevator is rather inconvenient and can be time prohibitive. So I was just kind of wondering your stance about that. I realize, you know, the dog's paws and everything can be an issue, but was wondering if specifically why you did that.
That was me. This is Carrie. Two things. Number one, the volume's like, it's hard to hear you guys. I don't know if you can turn the mic up.
I can talk a little bit louder maybe.
No, I think I got it. So the escalators, to clarify, we do not use escalators on puppy program with our volunteer puppy raisers. Our guide dog mobility instructors, dog trainers in harness training teach the dogs to use the escalator. So we preserve that for the professionals.
Gotcha.
Yes, we have the same there too. It's we do preserve that for them.
It takes one little accident or incident on the escalator as a puppy with a puppy raiser who may not have his technique down right, and the dog is freaked out for life and will never go near one. So once again, it's reserved for the professional trainers.
Okay, good point. Okay.
Same with harness training. Honestly, we don't do forward. We don't do, you know, we don't, there are a lot of your cues that we don't use on our puppy program at Guiding Eyes, because we want the dogs to go into training with a blank slate for things that are specifically related to guide work.
And we, on the other hand, our puppy raisers do teach forward. So there that they're, we're learning right from the beginning to have a nice steady pull.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
And we used to do forward, but it switched down to simplify a lot to leave more of the technical stuff with the trainers. Now pretty much everything is let's go as a puppy raiser.
I love that we have three different schools with three different. This is what I always say. Like we have about 500 puppy raisers at any one time. And so if you meet one, remember that's one. Same with the schools. I think we all have, you know, different techniques and different ways of going about things because they work for us and they're not necessarily universal.
Okay, good.
Any questions on Zoom for that one?
Guess not.
Somebody else said something too, but well, all right, go.
Do we have another question?
They're taking a microphone.
Okay.
We still have none in Zoom.
Hi, this is Mary, and I'm working with my fourth guide from, well, Dogs Inc. It will always be Southeastern to me, I'm sorry. My first three, I mean, all of mine, even this one, was graduated under Southeastern. So, but anyway, I think maybe could someone address, sometimes a dog, for instance, I'll throw my little boy under the bus. So he's a super guide, and he behaves in a restaurant very well. And he is, but when I'm at home, he thinks that the counter is his life. And so if I just don't leave food on the counter. That's more of an inconvenience to me, but he serves me so well otherwise that is something that I just try to manage. And I think I have nothing I have tried. It's, like I said, he's my fourth. Nothing I have tried with him has gotten him to give up that concept. And I do know from his puppy raisers that this was not an issue with them, that they were very good with him. So I think he realized that I could not see him, and he chose to take advantage of that. So anyway, I just kind of like a little input. Like sometimes an animal is not going to be maybe the best at one thing that you would want. But if they are working out very well in everything else, it's just something that you have to learn to manage.
Good point. Okay.
So because I have had this conversation with a few folks, our goal is to not make you have to manage anything. Like that's our goal. Do we always get there? No, we do not. And especially, you know, some of the like really smart dogs, I think, do figure out what they can do with one person versus another. And sometimes the problem solving abilities of the dog become their kind of, it's like they're using their powers for, instead of for good, they're using them for bad. So, you know, we do our best to try to make sure, because we want to make sure that the entire experience of living with the dog is good for you. And also that the dog is safe. You know, we consider poor house manners to be a potential safety issue. So we do try very, very hard to work on it, but we don't always get there. So sorry.
Okay. Do you have any other questions? Okay.
There's lots of questions, Doug. Just hang on.
Who's got a question?
Put your hand up, please.
Hey, Kim, reach out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hello. Could you go into a little bit more about the intelligent disobedience and how to... I don't want to punish him for, or correct him for making and to, for being disobedient for an intelligent situation. But when I know that situation is okay and he still says, no, you're just not doing it. No, I said no, because I mean, he actually steps in front of me and says, you know, you can't do this, but I don't particularly want to correct him. How can I best applaud him and then go, oh, it's okay, let's keep going? How, you know,
not hearing it
to do that. And then also he's starting to alert to other individuals who are having low blood pressure and low sugar. How do I cope with that? Because it's a great thing in a dog, it's not so great thing in the guide dog that's stopping and going, hey, he's got a problem. So yes, happened to a team lead at work, and he was like, no, we have to go help. So could you help with that?
Just so you know that you're coming through very, very faintly on Zoom here from the room.
Okay, we'll try to do better with that.
People, okay. Please speak up into the microphones.
Get close to it.
Do you want to take that one, Christine?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this seems like this is a situation you would really need to contact the school to really get a professional, you know, I mean, if someone can come out and visit with you and really see what the dog is doing in different situations, I think that would be your best bet. Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. While we do start to teach the puppies on puppy program a little bit of, you know, problem solving, once they get into the professional realm, like that's definitely your instructor, your guide dog mobility instructor, whatever, however the support is at your school.
I take it that all three of our schools do teach intelligent disobedience.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And I can tell you that it's really important.
It's an art, I gotta say.
No, that's an interesting question you brought up about the dog alerting to problem areas other than guide work. It sounds like that dog's got some extra sensitivity.
Ma'am, we can't hear you without a microphone. So, and just to give you guys a time check, it's 21 after.
Oh, so we got 9 minutes. Okay.
I was just going to agree. He is amazing. Yeah. Yeah, he is amazing.
Okay.
Do you want another question? Doug.
Yes, go ahead.
You want another question?
Yes.
Yes, I just wanted to ask, how much encouragement is given with the schools to the puppy raisers to take notes on what they expose the dogs to give the guide dog handlers access to that later? Because it's very useful information for us to have what the puppies have been exposed to.
Good, very good point that you brought up. I think that all of the schools have the puppy raisers keep detailed notes on how that dog is doing during the puppy raising program.
Exposures.
Yeah. Yes, we have, as I mentioned before, we have reports, 6 and 12 month reports. We also have what is called a puppy profile, which the puppy raisers have the access to when the pup becomes 4 months of age, because we feel like at that point, the puppy is really going to be going out to a lot of different places. So they're keeping track of those things and they're giving information in this puppy profile about where the family, what state they lived in and their a general environment, what it was like, rural area, what type of home they lived in. We like to also include in there all the different experiences they have. So we're hoping that they're doing that right from that 4 month mark and on, including all the different experiences that the dog has gone through and outings they've done. We also include, you know, some of the fun toys that the dogs like, and some of their favorite friends that they had during the time and any other pets they have in the home. So that's what our puppy profile. And then that is actually then shared, you know, with, person that the dog is matched with.
Okay. It's an interesting point you just brought that was brought up. To me, communications between the puppy raiser and the handler can be very helpful. Whether the school suggests open communication between the two or not, I think it's important to correspond with the puppy raiser. If you have any questions, just send it to the school and let the school send it on to the puppy raiser if that's the case. Any other questions? If you have a question, raise your hand and we'll get you the microphone. Just remember to put the microphone almost in your mouth when you say something.
Don't have a question, but I just wanted to get this in before the meeting was over, that I have two raffle baskets up here, and they're big, huge raffle baskets. One's a dog raffle basket. It's got tons of items in it, and so does a health basket. So if you're interested, you can come up to the front table and buy the tickets. They're $5 for one or three for 10. And I want to thank all the panelists, too, for the program today.
Thank you, Kathleen. Okay. Any other comments anyone would like to make?
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, funny story. Yesterday we were at a dinner and I was sitting, they had passed out cookies beforehand and I had put my peanut butter cookie in my purse and my purse was on the floor. And I was sitting there and lo and behold, a gentleman came up to me, his dog, led him right to me, and I didn't know why he's sitting over there looking guilty, and the dog is hiding. I can tell. But so that's that, that. So I was nowhere near where the handler was supposed to be, but the dog came to me because I had a peanut butter cookie in my purse. So
that was nice of you to do that. I'm sure the dog appreciated it.
Well, I didn't give it to him because I didn't even know why he was there. I was confused. What are you doing here? Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for coming. If you have any questions, feel free to contact your program and have them answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for having us. Always nice
thank
to be able to talk to graduates.
And I'd like to thank our presenters for being with us. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us to answer any questions, but also to cover some of the concerns that people may have. Judy August, do you have any last words that you'd like to share with us?
I'm a lady of few words, but very much appreciate what you guys do. I've gotten some wonderful dogs from my school.
Judy, get close to the microphone, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you do have them about to eat it. Anyway, thanks, guys. It's really been good.
Thank you very much. Thank you, for everybody, for coming.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Everybody is clapping in the hotel.